we're back with our live coverage of the Monarch Cup here at Wembley Stadium. I think we finally uncrossed all the wires, and we are now ready to bring you that interview I recorded earlier with the King. Roll it.
He froze in fear. His testicles shriveled up between his legs as he watched the slimy horror slither towards him, jaws drooling, open sores bubbling, and he knew he would never see Maine again.
I am very sorry, ladies and gentlemen. That was obviously Stephen King, and not at all the King we were hoping to speak with.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is, wherever you are. Thanks for subscribing, streaming, or downloading and listening to us on your computer or MP3 player. I'm Austin Titchener, one third of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and you're listening to this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast number 324, Appreciating Stephen King. As many longtime listeners to the podcast know, I am a huge fan of the author, Mr. Stephen King. I'm like 6 feet tall. I'm huge. Me and Anthony Wilkes are his number one fan. I've always wanted to talk about Stephen King on the podcast because I'm a fan, and I suspect some of our listeners maybe as well. But I've never really had anybody to talk about Stephen King with until tonight, when I'm sitting here in an English restaurant talking to the better half of our UK stage manager, Davey Naylor, his wife, Catherine Naylor.
But you don't have a basement and a really large sledgehammer to bash people's ankles off?
Dude, neither does Annie Wilkes, and I think in the book it's an axe.
Oh, that's right. They changed it for the movie.
Schooled already.
You are not only a fan of Stephen King, you're literally a student of him, are you not? You wrote a paper about him.
I did. I wrote a mini thesis in my honors year at the University of Cape Town about the shorter works of Stephen King, so the short stories and the novellas.
Right, okay. So the novellas, which includes the sources for many of his greatest films, the greatest films based on Stephen King's work. The Body is the source for Stand By Me.
By Rob Reiner.
Rita Hayworth and The Shawshank Redemption is, of course, the source for
The Shawshank Redemption.
And those are both in the same book, different seasons. I first discovered Stephen King in a liquor store in Alameda, California. I was standing at one of those revolving wire racks looking at comic books and looking at paperbacks going, and I was like 13 or 14 or whatever when it first came out, and I saw this skinny paperback of Karen. I went, this looks interesting, and I think I finished it that night. I stayed up till 3 o'clock in the morning.
He is one of those authors who is literally unputdownable.
Well, how did you first discover the master?
Well, I'm, as people who know me know very well, kind of an elitist, so I dismissed him for many years.
One of those. Interesting.
I am indeed,
thought
yes.
Of him as a penny dreadful.
I did think of him as a penny dreadful, and I was dating a very, very lovely man who, in fact, has started his own sci-fi and horror magazine. So I suppose influenced very much by King in that respect.
Okay.
Who insisted that I start reading the short stories. I was A, not a horror fan, and B, very prejudiced against Stephen King. But he gave me first Night Shift, which is Stephen King's first collection of short stories, and ticked off the ones he thought I wouldn't find too scary. The first story I ever read was Quitter's Ink.
Oh, yeah.
About the man who tries to quit smoking.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
And signs up with a company who is either the mafia or a bunch of slightly different Scientologists to help him quit smoking. It remains to this day, I think, one of the most exciting stories I've ever read. Very funny.
Well, and I've just read several of those stories from Night Shift to my daughter, who's 12, and we read a Graveyard Shift, which is also a kind of a horrifying, sickening story of going down to clean out a sub-basement when there's all these rats, and then discovering a sub-sub-basement and discovering even more rats, even more larger, ginormous, cow-sized rats.
I was just going to say, I'm impressed that you finally came on board with the King phenomenon, because my senior year of high school, our teacher said a major portion of your final grade, my final semester, semester, my senior year at HSPVA, was your final book report. And she said, your book is so important that you have to approve, I need to approve it. We need to talk about it. And I remember my friend Tiger managed to get slipped by with Dune. And I remember, really? Well, if you're doing Dune, yeah. Yeah, if you're doing Dune, or Dune, as you Brits would say.
Dune is pronounced with a J. Dune.
Then I can do it. I want to do it. And she said, absolutely not. Because she thought of him as that cheap horror novel. I mean, she wouldn't have agreed, I think, even to H.P. Lovecraft. You know, probably Edgar Allan Poe, because he has a few more years between us. But she said no. And I was horrified. Because I said, do you understand that King loves literary devices? He loves either jump cutting, the way that you string stories together, parallel the past and the present.
The thing I always liked about Stephen King is that he doesn't insult the reader's intelligence, and he doesn't talk down to his readers,
exactly,
like Roald Dahl, who never talked down to kids, like Maurice Sendak, who never talked down to children. He doesn't have pretensions, and he doesn't have much time for people who have pretensions, which I also respect. You know, he tells the story he wants to tell, and he layers in all the literary devices that you see in important novels. And I know, remember when I was trying to teach, I was thinking, God, I would love to teach a high school course on Stephen King, because you could discuss all the important themes, and the kids will actually have read all the books.
And if they haven't, they will enjoy doing so.
Right.
I had a similar experience to Rippy's, in that when I was in my honors year, that's 4 years of study, not three like over here, I decided I wanted to focus on King for my mini thesis.
All right.
And I also had to justify to Jessica, my supervisor, why I wanted to do King. And she said, look, I'm a Lovecraft fan, I'm a Frank Herbert fan, I'm a Clive Barker fan, so I understand the... And she used to teach on the Victorian uncanny.
Uh-huh.
She understood why I wanted to write about horror and science fiction.
Uh-huh.
What she didn't get was why King.
Uh-huh.
She had exactly the same perspective that I had had before I read him. And she gave me, she said, I'll give you 6 weeks, you write me a paper justifying why you want to do this, and in the meantime I will read 6 stories that you pick, and we'll meet again and we'll talk. When it came 6 weeks later, I didn't actually have to read her my paper, because she had decided for herself, on the basis of those stories, that it was okay.
Hi, this is Stephen Weber, and you're listening to the Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast.
Where can you RSC the RSC? In March, we return with performances of The Complete World of Sports Abridged in Scottsdale, Arizona, and Moorhead, Minnesota, then in April. We begin a 12-week tour of Great Britain with the complete works of William Shakespeare Abridged Revised. As always, the very best way to stay up to date about all of our worldwide performance dates is to sign up for the Reduced Reader, our email newsletter. Go to ReducedShakespeare.com, click on the link to subscribe, and check out our touring page for specific box office, venue, and ticket information. And now back to the noisy but fabulous Indian restaurant in Balham, where Catherine Naylor and I, joined briefly by Matt Rippey, continue to share our thoughts on the King. For any of our listeners who haven't, for some reason, read any Stephen King, what would you recommend as maybe the top five? Off the top of your head, I know I'm putting you on the spot.
Well, I love short fiction, so I would definitely recommend something like Nightmares and Dreamscapes or Different Seasons.
Are the collections of short stories and novellas, yes?
Unfortunately, Rage is no longer available, which King explains in his essay on guns. He withdrew it because a large proportion of the young men who had shot up schools and so on in the United States referenced it. But I still think that it's an extraordinary piece of work, the more so because he wrote it as a high school student.
Well, and he writes it from the perspective of one of these disturbed teens. You know, this is his gift or his curse, is that he he dives into the minds of these really sick, perverted, not perverted, but sick, twisted characters. And, you know, for our entertainment, I guess, it's a safe way. That's a whole other podcast, is why our horror story is appealing. That's a whole other conversation. All right, so Rage.
I would also recommend his one of his nonfiction books, Dance Macabre, which is probably one of the best critiques of the horror genre I've ever read. I mean, it's up there with Noel Carroll and Carol. Sorry, I've forgotten her name right now. Who wrote Men, Women, and Chainsaws? It is one of the absolutely definitive critiques of horror around.
Absolutely, and I would add his other nonfiction great work on writing.
Yeah.
Both of which. This is the other thing about King. As great a storyteller as he is, he completely understands the field he's working in. You know, he's a great farmer and a great tiller of the field. He knows what he's talking about.
Then I would recommend, funnily enough, Tommyknockers, which is, I think, one of the most underrated of his novels. It's ostensibly about a buried spaceship, but in reality, it's about relationships breaking down because of different faith systems. And I found that, especially growing up in a multicultural society, something that was very close to my heart and quite heartbreaking.
Tommyknockers, is that the one where a small town in Maine is corrupted by an outside force and you see all the evil that goes on within the town behind the scenes?
No, you're thinking of Needful Things.
I'm thinking of every one of his books. Every single one of his books. Needful Things is another great one that I think is underrated. It shouldn't be in anybody's top 10, but boy, is it a good read, and wow, does he know how to. Exactly right. He's writing the flip side, not really the flip side, he's just going a little darker than Thornton Wilder did in Our Town. You know, behind the white picket fences, oh, there's a lot of shit happening.
Scene with a picture of Elvis still creeps me out.
Oh dear. All right, so Tommyknockers, an underrated gem. Yes, continue.
I would also, you can't discuss King and not discuss The Stand.
Yeah.
It is his opus. I think 30 years later, it still probably is best work.
I agree with you that it's one of his classic books, and I was reading it for the very first time while on a trip to visit my grandmother in New Jersey, and we were taking the bus into the city, and so as we passed through the Lincoln Tunnel, I was reading the chapter about trying to get through the Lincoln Tunnel, and oh my God, when we got stuck for traffic, I was having a nightmare that we're going to be stuck here. It was very creepy.
I can totally relate to that, because when I read it, I was in Mozambique. We were in a part of Mozambique in Inhambane, which is just deserted. There are very few people there. If you go into the major city, Inhambane, which is the capital of Inhambane province, it's a ghost town.
Wow.
And so for 5 days, I read this book and experienced ghost towns and that feeling of being on the edge of the world where there's nobody left.
So would The Stand be your number one suggestion, your number one recommendation, if you could only read, not The Shining?
No, I think The Shining's excellent. But I have issues with King's portrayal of women, and I don't think that he's fair to Wendy.
No, that's true. Yeah, I think his ability to write women has gotten much, much better over the years.
I agree. I think Lizzie's story was probably the turning point.
Yeah. Well, and I don't disagree, although I think The Shining has to be in the top three for me, for sure. It's just because talk about the seminal work. But the other thing is, I think one of King's most underrated abilities is his drawing of relationships, romantic relationships.
Absolutely.
And I remember reading Dead Zone. Again, I have every Stephen King hardcover in first edition. And I read the Dead Zone and was
was sitting in my girlfriend's apartment reading it in college, crying on the couch, as because their relationship took a turn, a very poignant turn. And it was lovely. I haven't read it since. But it was so great. But I will say, his latest book, 11-22-63, which I quite enjoyed, it was structured very similarly to The Dead Zone.
Yeah.
I cried twice during that as well. Once during a romantic thing, and then once during the high school section, which I won't divulge. But anyway, I think these are underrated abilities of his. I think his dialogue is, for the most part, is unfilmable, because his dialogue can be very, it's hokey, colloquial, very specific to Maine. You know, every single person talks like the most eccentric person you ever heard. You know, not like regular people. So, but I think for the most part, he makes it work on the page. But you have to, it won't work on the film. Sorry.
Okay. Well, you want to talk about underrated aspects of King. His ability to tap into both young and old. And I was just thinking, for example, Insomnia, which is written from the perspective of an 80-something-year-old man who finds romance very, very rare in our culture entirely. Against The Girl Who Loved Tom Gordon, for example, written from the perspective of a girl who's about eight or nine. And each of them affecting, genuine, completely believable. Yeah. Funnily enough, Gerald's Game and Dolores Claiborne, I love both books, but the bits where they interact with each other are almost unreadable. If you cut those parts out of each of the books, they would be near perfect thrillers.
Well, I'm sorry, with the bits where they interact with each other, how do you mean? Who? Interact with who?
In Dolores Claiborne, she has visions where she sees a woman, a little girl being abused by her father. In Gerald's Game, while she's tied to the bed, dying, the lead character remembers being molested by her father and the feeling of being watched. The two books are written in the same universe.
Oh, interesting. Well, now, and speaking of universes, this is one thing we haven't talked about, is the entire Dark Tower series, which are my only parts of the Stephen King oeuvre I can't get through.
Me neither. I got halfway through The Gunslinger and stopped.
Yeah, I don't know why that is. I can't do it.
But he himself said that as a father, he decided that he wanted to write books that his children would be interested in. So he himself said, this is not going to be for my usual following.
Yeah.
And he wasn't happy with Cycle of the Werewolf?
Or what was the thing about the Eyes of the Dragon? It's just, it's a level of fantasy that it's also not just my thing. I like fantasy where it has a big foot in this world.
Like Terry Pratchett?
Like Terry Pratchett, but yes, like Harry Potter. I mean, I'm more of a Harry Potter guy. I'm more of a Narnia guy than I am a Tolkien guy.
Right.
You know, because those both have feet in this world. And he, at best, has a couple of toes in this world with the Dark Tower series. That's it for this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast. Did you agree? Send us your horror stories or Stephen King favorites via email to feedback@reducedshakespeare.com. You can also post comments on many of our website pages, and you can post reviews on iTunes. You can interact with other fans at our website and our Reduced Shakespeare Company Facebook fan page. You can also become a subscriber to our YouTube channel or become a twit. Follow us on Twitter @Reduced. You can find easy links to all these social networks at our website, reducedshakespeare.com. Thanks, as always, to webmaster Matt Rippey, alcoholic hotel caretaker Matthew Croak, music by John Weber and GarageBand. Our random fan shout-out this week goes to Frank Forkle. No reason, it's just random. Special thanks to Stephen Weber, who played Jack Torrance in the, I can't say superior, but certainly the more faithful film adaptation of The Shining. Thanks also so much to Catherine Naylor for joining me in a conversation I've wanted to have for a very long time. And thanks very much to you for listening. I'm Austin Titchener, 324, 970 seconds of the Reduced Shakespeare Company.
Did you just say that out loud? You're more Narnia than you are Lord of the Rings?
Yeah.
Wow.
That's another podcast.
The This podcast is a production of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, reducing expectations since 1981. Go to ReduceShakespeare.com for performance dates, actor bios, email newsletters, and so much less. So much less. So much less.